Merriam-Webster defines a meme in the following way: an idea, behavior, style, or usage that spreads from person to person within a culture, or an amusing or interesting item, such as a captioned picture or video, or genre of items that is spread widely online, especially through social media. So basically, a meme is a picture or a video that becomes popular and gets shared around. One of the most popular ones is Success Kid. Have you seen this guy before? This little kid, he's got this fist and he's just excited. And so you put words to it that just kind of go around there. So there's a few up there, a little bit hard to see, but boss walks by when I'm actually working, right? That's a good one. Golly, my eyes are getting bad. Let's see what some of these other ones are. Walked into the room, remembered why. Anybody struggle with that? Yeah, you're excited when you can remember. Hit a speed bump, the check engine light went away. There you go. And then I found a birthday card from 2 years ago, had 50 bucks in it. Yes, right? So that's one of the most popular ones. But there's another one that has particular importance for us today. In the third Star Wars movies, Return of the Jedi, the rebels are attacking. Pat is shaking her head. I'm talking about Star Wars again. She's not happy about that. That's all right, though. In the third Star Wars movie, Return of the Jedi, the rebels are fighting against the Empire, and they discover that there is a new Death Star that's been built, and it's fully operational. And so what they've walked into is a trap. And so Admiral Ackbar, that's him right there. He's of the Mon Calamari species, which is a funny name for somebody who looks like a calamari. But anyway, he says, it's a trap, right? And this is this thing that kind of became very just huge and a funny part of the movie because it's very obvious, and he just kind of blurts it out. Anyway, so they've created a meme around this, and there's all kinds of different ones. I'm going to keep it kind of light this morning. So, oh, you don't need to get me anything for Valentine's Day. That's a trap, right? If somebody tells you that, it's a trap. All right, let's look at the next one. Girlfriend asks you if she looks fat. It's a trap. Don't fall for it, right? Okay? Steps are monitored by HR. It's a trap. All right? The girlfriend says, go ahead, buy an Xbox if you want. It's a trap, okay? Don't fall for the go to the bathroom dream. Anybody ever had one of those? It's a trap. Yeah? All right? And this is my favorite. It's a good dad joke. Don't spell part backwards. It's a trap. You get it? Yeah? All right, good. All right, well, I made one for today because this story, I think, is a trap that they are trying to set for Jesus. So the Pharisees bring only the woman caught in adultery before Jesus and want to stone her. It's a trap. It's a trap that they are trying to set for Jesus. They want him to make some kind of difficult, impossible decision, and we'll see what he does. So, again, this woman is brought before Jesus. She is accused of this crime of adultery. It says that she's been actually caught in the act, which I don't know exactly what that means or looks like, but there you go. And they want Jesus to respond. They say, Jesus, this woman's been caught, and the law says that she must be punished, she must be stoned to death. And so then how is Jesus going to respond? Well, I think, first of all, this scenario begs some questions that just kind of jump out at us. So the first one is, who is this woman? She doesn't have a name. At least we're not given her name in Scripture. And so one of the things that indicates to me is that the people didn't care enough about her to know her name, to record it, to pass it down through history and through these stories. She's just known as the woman caught in adultery. And so in many ways, she's treated less as a person and more as a means to an end to try to get at Jesus. So who is this woman? We really don't even know the answer to that question. Second one, how was she caught? I don't have an answer for that. The story doesn't tell us. Could be that they set a trap for her. Could be they made the whole thing up. Who knows? We really don't have any kind of details around that. But the story itself begs that question. How did this situation come to arise? And then lastly, perhaps the most telling to me, where is her partner in all of this? It is just this woman who is dragged before Jesus, not the man that she was with? Why is he not there? Stoning would have been the punishment for both parties, not just for her. So where is he in all of this? Has he just walked away and gone free? Have they already stoned him? We simply don't know. And so we are left with this story, and we are wondering, because we don't have a lot of details. Now, perhaps this woman really did something terrible. Perhaps she really did do something wrong, and she was unfaithful, and she did all these things. Or maybe she didn't. Again, we really don't know. Part of us wants to trust the words of the scribes and the Pharisees, but part of me is not able to quite trust them. But either way, she is accused of this crime, and she is humiliated and degraded. I mean, put yourself in her shoes. Regardless of whether you've done this thing or not, you were dragged out in the middle of the temple in front of everybody who's gathered that day for worship and for study, and you're accused of this terrible thing, and your fate is handed over to someone else. What do we do with this lady? Often in our society, we treat those who are accused of crimes and who've been convicted of crimes in the worst possible ways. The previous church that I served had a very active prison ministry out at River Bend, and I still get out there from time to time. And it is amazing, just horrifying in some ways, the ways that we treat the prisoners in our society. The ways that we don't even treat them and think of them as human beings, but more like problems to be managed, or animals even. I recently saw the movie Just Mercy. I don't know if you all have seen it or even seen the previews for it. It's about a man played by Jamie Foxx who was wrongly accused of a crime in the town where To Kill a Mockingbird is set. And he's convicted of this crime, and there's no evidence for him other than the testimony of somebody else. And then Robert B. Jordan is the lawyer who comes in and kind of saves the day. But it is a moving and powerful film if you've not seen it. It's based on a true story. But it very much shows how we treat people who've been accused and convicted of crimes, and how we dehumanize them and humiliate them and make them seem less than human. But in the story, Jesus is not willing to participate in that kind of activity. As Lisa pointed out, he stops the bullying. He sees this woman as a human being, as another person who has a whole life, has all kinds of experiences and feelings and emotions and things that she is going through. He recognizes her and sees her. Gosh, it's hard to put myself in her shoes. But this morning as I try, oh, just how terrible, how humiliating and degrading it must have been for her. But then I think about Jesus as well. And the situation that he's put into. Again, this is a trap that they are setting for him. It's like he's stuck between a rock and a hard place, right? He has to choose to either uphold the law, which says that this woman should be stoned to death, or to show mercy and kindness and break the law. How do you choose? How do you choose between upholding the law or showing mercy? Because if he decides to show mercy, well, then they'll say, oh, well, he's not a good teacher. He's not fulfilling the law. He's not being true to the covenant that God has with us. So how does he choose? What does he do? Well, Jesus is a lot wiser than you or than me. And so I think he has a good response. But before we get to that, I want to think about kind of this trapped feeling again that Jesus must have felt. Now, it doesn't go into detail about that, but putting myself in his shoes, trying to imagine what it was like, I get that sense of a feeling. Have you ever felt trapped before? I mean, maybe not physically, but kind of emotionally trapped. It is a terrible feeling. It is probably one of my least favorite feelings in the world. When it feels like you don't have control over the situation, or it feels like whatever option you might be able to choose is a bad one, where whatever happens, it's not going to be a good outcome. Most of us have probably felt that way before, and it's awful. I mean, when you're in that moment, there's just kind of this panic that sets in, right? That you don't know what to do because no option is a good option. You don't know which way to turn. You want help, but there's no one to help you. You can't go this way. You can't go that way. You are stuck. You are trapped. I don't get claustrophobia, but I imagine it's kind of the emotional equivalent of claustrophobia, just being stuck and not able to do anything. Imagine Jesus in that situation feeling that way. Now, I don't often feel this way, and a big part of that is just my location in society. As a white male who's well-educated, I have lots more options than many other people in the world have. In fact, I think there are some people in the world who almost always feel this way, who almost always feel trapped, simply because of their location in society, because of the poverty that they experience or the upbringing that they've had or their race or their gender or their identity or whatever it might be. And they feel trapped, like they don't have a good option in front of them. And so they're simply choosing between bad options, if they can even choose at all. And that is a terrible feeling, friends. And so I wonder if part of our role is to recognize when people are in this kind of trapped situation and to try to rescue them. Or maybe not rescue, but at least help them find some more options that are available. So let's think about what Jesus does in this situation. He does four things that I think can be instructive to us whenever we feel this kind of trapped feeling, whenever we're put in any kind of trapped situation, or when we can see that somebody else is there. So the first thing that Jesus does is that he tolerates the discomfort that he's feeling. You don't see him lashing out. He doesn't panic. He doesn't freak out. He doesn't yell at the people. He doesn't scream. He doesn't go crazy. He simply tolerates this feeling that he has. He's able to contain it, to sit with it for a while, and not let it determine and rule what it is that he's going to do. Now, that's a lot easier said than done. Whenever we get activated by some kind of emotion, it is our default is to act out of that emotion. If we get angry, then we're going to lash out and maybe yell at somebody or do something. If we're afraid, then fight or flight, right? That's kind of our automatic response. If we feel trapped, then we might shut down. If we feel happy, we might, you know, laugh or be rejoiceful or whatever. But it's kind of our default as human beings, whenever we feel some kind of strong emotion, to act out of that emotion. But Jesus instead is able to tolerate the emotion, to sit with it, to allow himself to be in that, but not to act out of the emotion, to let it kind of pass. The second thing that Jesus does is that he slows everything down. Do you notice that the scribes and the Pharisees, they come to him, and it's almost like this kind of frenzy. They're coming to him and say, oh, we've caught this woman. What are we going to do? What, Jesus, tell us what to do with this. And Jesus slows down. It says that he draws on the ground, right? That's the background image on the screen. We don't know what he writes or what he does. Maybe he's drawing a picture. Kind of the tradition is that he is listing out the sins of all the people who have gathered around. Maybe, maybe not. Maybe he's writing down the commandment to love your neighbor as yourself. Maybe he's writing a grocery list. Who knows? But he slows everything down. He doesn't buy into the frenzy that's been whipped up by the scribes and the Pharisees. He slows down and gives himself time to think, gives everybody some time for emotions to settle a little bit. He slows down. I think that's a good response. Whenever we get activated by whatever is going on in our life, we need to slow down. Take some breaths. Clear our heads. And know that we don't have to make a decision right then and there. We can wait. Up next, Jesus reframes the situation. You see, it's been framed for him that either he fulfills the law or he breaks the law. Either he allows to die or he doesn't. And so often, we are put in situations like that as well, aren't we? Where somebody else frames the situation for us that there's only two choices, A or B, and you've got to choose one of them. But in reality, many times, there's an option C or D or E or F, where there's some kind of space in between that we can inhabit. Jesus is able, because he's tolerating his discomfort, because he's slowed down, to step outside of the framing that the Pharisees and scribes have said, and said, no, it's not about choosing one or the other. And so then Jesus finds a third way. That's the last thing. Instead of responding directly to their question, he poses a question back to them. He asks them, which of you is without sin? Because then you can cast the first stone. He finds a third way. Jesus doesn't have to choose at all between those two options. He simply puts it back on those who've gathered. The implication is, who is any one of us to judge someone else? If you are perfect, well then by all means, pass judgment on this woman. But we all know that none of us is perfect. None of us can judge another. I think there is great wisdom in how Jesus responds in this situation. Tolerating his own feelings, slowing things down, rejecting the way that it's been framed and thinking about it in a different way, and then finding another option, finding another way. In our lives, we will encounter all kinds of situations that might feel like a trap to us. They might not be as obvious as this one is. Often when we're in the moment, it's not so obvious. But one of the things that we can pay attention to that I think is a signal to us are our emotions. When something pops up really big all of a sudden, that's when we need to pay attention and do what Jesus did. Tolerate that emotion. Don't immediately react out of it. Slow things down. And then find a different way. Friends, I want to be like Jesus in all aspects of my life. That is who I strive to be, to follow after him, to walk in his footsteps, to be like Jesus. In some ways, I do that well, and in other ways, I don't. And this is one of those ways where I really want to be like Jesus. Because I really struggle. It is so easy to allow emotions to get the best of us, to fall into these traps and just walk into them and get stuck and get trapped. I want that kind of wisdom that Jesus has. I want to be able to tolerate those emotions and to be able to slow things down. And so the next time that you get activated, the next time that your emotions are heightened, I invite you to remember this story and remember what Jesus did and how he responded. May we see the traps in our lives for what they are, and may we live into the wisdom of Jesus Christ. Amen.